Welcome to the Kakatibi Podcast, your source for all things health, happiness, and beauty. Hi, Alana. Thank you so much for being with us here today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So before we begin, tell us a little bit about yourself, your story, and why you learned so much about hormones.
Yeah, sure. So I have an interesting story about why I'm so into health and the body and hormones. First, my mom is a medical doctor. She's mostly treats cancer now, but how she ended up being a medical doctor is she had a series of health challenges, and that was from her doctor, her mom's doctor, actually prescribing a pill called DES. And this was a pill given in the 50s. It was prescribed to prevent miscarriage, and they later found out it actually caused miscarriage. And not just that, it caused like birth defects, cancer, infertility, shaped uteruses, all these kind of interesting defects. And this was a hormone that they were giving. It was a high dose of synthetic estrogen. And so she like dealt with a lifetime of challenges. And then there's still ongoing research on the grandchildren, because these things can be generational, as like a lot of trauma can be. And just in the same way, being exposed to a pill may have effects on the grandchildren even. That kind of led me down the road of just like marveling at the human body and hormones and how they play this massive role in the body. And there's so much we can do to optimize it. If you think about hormones, they're really the backbone of the organism. Actually, the word means to set in motion. And so you can imagine if even a slight off balance of them can cause things to be out of motion, out of balance. And so, yeah, I was working in finance, and on my side, I was just working on wellness projects, and then became like head of marketing at a cancer institute. And a lot of people don't know that most cancers are related to hormones. They play such a large role, like biologically, in our every function of the body. So it makes sense that nothing's localized. They're playing a role in everything, but especially like breast cancer, which most women are like worried. They know someone that's gotten breast cancer or something. But yeah, the breast tissue is strongly hormonally sensitive. So that kind of I just find that so fascinating that we know this, but no one really talks about the proactive things you can do or the preventative things you can do to avoid getting cancer or breast cancer or just age gracefully kind of thing.
Why do you think so many hormonal imbalances happen? What are some of the major causes?
We're seeing this happen earlier and earlier. Even the age of puberty's decreased a lot. It used to be older, and now it's happening younger, which can give us insight into this. This is even happening like earlier and earlier, because usually like a hormone imbalance can happen just through the aging process. Which for things like causes why you have so such harsh symptoms is because it like hits you really fast. But it doesn't really, because it happens 40, like 10 years before menopause, you start feeling things, but you really feel the strong side effects of a hormone imbalance in menopause. So just that natural aging process. But when you're younger, you have really strong production, like everything's more capable when you're younger. So your production's really strong. And then when you age, the production can go down, and then it interacts with a lot of other environmental things. So I think by the time you're like 60, you're making about 5% of the DHEA you made when you're in your 20s, which is wow, small. But the good thing is like DHEA is very inexpensive to buy. It's a very protective hormone. And so it's easy to solve that one on the like environmental side, everything from what you eat to stress to the things you put in your body to medications. Those are really the strong things. And then when you put them all together, you have this like storm of something wrecking your endocrine system. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of women, it starts with what they're eating. The diet is just not suitable for humans, like what we are given in the grocery store for the most part. And then you add on that layer of like confusion. Everyone's telling you to eat different things, so you don't know what to eat. Then you have this kind of like starvation mode, and you're not getting enough nutrients for these systems to work. And so once that's resolved, a lot of these things can be fixed, because supplements are supplemental to the basics of health, which is like eating and environment. So even things like light deprivation can hurt the endocrine system. And with us spending most time inside, it can play a huge factor as well. We were just talking about winter, and winter tends to be a state of hormone production that does go down, because all these things are like interacting with you. Yeah, and a lot of different reasons, and it depends on your context. So, you know, anything from medication to aging to environment to food, things like phytoestrogens are really common. I think we actually we're talking about this online. It's very common to find phytoestrogens in plants. It's a lot easier to find a phytoestrogen than something like progesterone in a plant. And there's a lot of arguments why that is, but possibly to deter people from eating or, from the plant dying. So to stay alive, they incorporate certain mechanisms, and that may be why. But we take it as, oh, let's just take all these phytoestrogens because maybe, I don't know, I think they're displayed as healthy sometimes, but they can mimic estrogen basically. So that's just one of the ways you do things. You do things with the good intention and then you find out later, oops, that wasn't really maybe what I should have been doing. But yeah.
Yeah, I know with flaxseed, it's such a debate. Some people are like, you need flaxseed if you have estrogen dominance. It's like the good estrogen, blah, blah, blah. It'll block receptors. And then the other people are like, you already have estrogen dominance. You don't want more estrogen. Don't have it. And it's just, which one do you do?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I've been approached by some seed cycling companies that are like, oh, you should do this. But no, no, I don't think you should. Just quite simply, if it's a phytoestrogen, it may mimic estrogen, and all estrogens ultimately have the same effect. That's why they're classified that way. So this idea of good estrogen, bad estrogen is really a human interpretation based off a theory that may or may not be true. Yeah. I personally haven't found a benefit from eating seeds in general. So removing them, I think, makes life a lot smoother in a lot of ways. Yeah. Just in general, beyond estrogen, honestly, they're very high in polyunsaturated fats and can just in general disturb the metabolism. So that's just an extension of hormones, but it's all playing together.
Yeah. What do you think about dairy? Is dairy bad?
Oh, no, I think dairy is good. I think people always bring up that there's estrogen in dairy. I think most people are getting at. But what most people forget or don't know is that it actually has a very high content of progesterone in dairy, which is we have this amazing way of turning everything negative in today's. The fact that we can get hormones from animal products is not a bad thing. That is a good thing. And we shouldn't interpret that necessarily as bad. Now, I'm not saying if they are pumping these animals with artificial sort of contaminants, I'm not a proponent of that by any means. But the fact that dairy does have a small amount of estrogen and a very high amount of progesterone is a good thing. And that matches a natural ratio. You want to have ultimately higher progesterone than estrogen as part of just the ratio to be healthy. And it depends on how you measure it, on which kind of measurement cycles, units you're using and stuff. But no, dairy has a lot of good things to it beyond just hormones, a really high amount of calcium as well that we need for the body. I drink a lot of dairy. I think the inability to digest dairy is indicative of a bigger problem. Anytime you have a food that really has been consumed for thousands of years and you can't handle it, I do think you should investigate that further. Dairy cows themselves, if you meet them, they're very friendly, which is different than a meat cow. Meat cow won't go near you, but dairy cows, they're that friendly because they have been that for thousands of years near humans, which is really a beautiful relationship between man and animal. Dairy's great, cheese, milk. The only thing I don't eat as much of probably is yogurt, but overall, dairy, I don't think should be feared. And you also want to be conscious of this fear diet mindset that I think just can put us into this limited diet restriction starvation zone, where we really want to be free, seem comfortable, understanding that these foods are meant for us and not placing this fear. I saw someone saying that cooked food was meat was bad as well. I think that's the same mindset of turning these things around, because finding fire to cook food is really what allowed humans to thrive. And there's a good argument made that actually heating meat may unlock a lot of the bio of these proteins, saying that you're going to get cancer from a little bit of charred food. It's a wild interpretation of how long we've been really cooking food. But yeah, no, to answer, long answer to say that depending on what you can tolerate, it can be a great food. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good to hear, because you're the first person that said that dairy is okay that I've had on the podcast. I've had so many doctors and nutritionists and everybody, and they're all like, no dairy, don't have it. And I'm here sneakily having dairy. And I'm just don't tell them.
Yeah. I think things enter the lexicon of what we talk about and they just get repeated. But no, milk is like it is a very healthy thing to eat. Drink milk and eat cheese every day. Feel great. Not that my anecdote matters as much, but if you look at the nutrient profile, it's very strong. And then given our historical precedence of consuming it for so long, it's likely suitable for humans.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about cortisol and cortisone. So what are the signs that they're high or they're low, and why does it matter? And what do you have to do about it?
Yeah. So cortisol is a hormone that's released under stress for organisms, and it has its useful purpose. Like all hormones have their beautiful biological functions. What the problem is when it's elevated chronically. So you can test for it. We use a blood test at moment, and you can do saliva as well. There's really high concentration, so it's very easy to test. So I think people are like coming out with at-home kind of markers, and the first thing they'll be able to test really is the cortisol, because this is a marker that's just easy to test given the high concentration. But the problem is when it's chronically elevated, it'll break down your bones, which is why veterans have a very, very high rate of osteoporosis. So you can learn a lot from that. And then you can learn a lot from Cushing's syndrome, or Cushing's disease, or said similarly, but which is only caused by cortisol, usually by either a tumor that's releasing it or by an injection. Doctors will administer this, but if they do it too much, you can have huge issues. Administering cortisol is very anti-healing. And so it's really, I'm not a proponent of administering that at all. Again, it's very anti-healing because ultimately it's catabolic and it'll cause a cascade of issues. And it's nothing short of insane what it'll do. And you can see this on the serious side effects of Cushing's syndrome. You have this like moon face, fat pads, cellulite, and it like changes your skin and it changes your appearance. And that's one of the things with hormones is it'll actually change the way you look. And actually on cortisol, on that note, the higher your cortisol, the higher your perceived age, which really shouldn't come as a like surprise, because the more stress you're under, you really do embody it and it shows up on your face. But it correlates with higher perceived age. So if I like had to guess your age and someone had to, it would correlate with your cortisol, which is just crazy. But so again, it's needed, and the body has mechanisms to meet the cortisol and to protect the body. So one of the ways it protects you from cortisol is with high DHEAS. When you're younger, it's very robust DHEA. The problem is when you're older, that protective hormone drops, and then you have cortisol unopposed without, it doesn't have DHEA to protect you. And that's one of these cascades that can happen. Stress is like always involved with something like PCOS, for example. When you overstimulate the adrenals and you release cortisol, that's when you uniquely see the effects of PCOS come up, and that's facilitated through high estrogen. And actually the high androgen production during PCOS is better interpreted as a protective mechanism rather than a cause, because really it's the overstimulation of adrenals, which leads to production of cortisol, that ultimately is involved with PCOS. And that correlates with the effects of Cushing's syndrome, just really how serious this is, high cortisol. I know people joke about stress and stuff, but ultimately it's even responsible for the exacerbation of cancer, metastasis, and usually the body has the energy to meet that. But it seems like in modernity, we just may not always be having the tools to really overcome what we're dealt sometimes, whether it's with nutrient deficiencies or environmental issues or environmental stress. I guess sometimes the body isn't able to meet that demand. And that's when you see things like on the extreme sides, cancer.
So I was told that even if your cortisol and cortisone are in range, if your cortisone is higher than your cortisol, that's bad. Do you know anything about that?
No, cortisone isn't really as commonly tested. So a lot of people wouldn't really even have that data, to be honest. Did you like go into LabCorp and stuff and get that measured?
Oh, I went and I did a Dutch test.
Oh, really? And they measured cortisone?
Yeah.
So with the Dutch test is urine, for anyone that doesn't know, and it's really popular these days. But we actually, and we get asked this all the time, like why we don't use urine. And it's because those are secretions leaving the body And they may or may not represent what's actually the state inside you. That's the same issue with saliva as well. Those are secretions leaving the body. And like they're leaving you. They're not necessarily the constituents of what's inside you. And so that's one of the reasons we actually don't use blood. But that's usually not someone's issue with our patients. I look at labs a lot, and most of the time cortisol is elevated. And if it's really low, like that low cortisol turnover, it could be indicative of a thyroid issue usually. But for the most part, we definitely see this like high cortisol issue with high estrogen, with low DHEA and low progesterone. So that low progesterone is really needed. Adequate progesterone is really needed for the body to feel soothed. That's one of its mechanisms, feeling soothing. And yeah.
Okay, so what if someone had really high DHEA, androgens, estrogen dominant, but normal progesterone? Is that a problem?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain ranges that you definitely want to feel like are in range. But what do they have? High DHEA, low normal progesterone? Oh, high estrogen? Yeah, so the high estrogen, a root cause, that hyperestrogen of those things. Like I have really high DHEA, and that's actually the same as men, which is unique because men and women, they both tend to have very strong DHEA and really high concentration in the brain. And it tends to be a less strong androgen than testosterone, but it is still very strong and it's associated with youth. So having that really robust isn't necessarily the worst thing, and it rises with cortisol to protect you. And so, like I mentioned, the problem is if that stops dropping. And ultimately, you want to get to the bottom of why you would have high cortisol. That's not really a good state to be in. A lot of times it's just you're going through something or work or something, but that's not optimal. So we want to get to the bottom of that. And then that high estrogen, that's it's not good. We interpret estrogen right now as this like female hormone, but it's better understood as like a growth hormone. And so for women, it allows us to have children through taking in water into the cell and then causing the cells to divide. And so it's a growth hormone, and that's why it's associated with like hypergrowth with things like endometriosis and PCOS. Like endometriosis is growth outside that hypergrowth, and then estrogen's needed to have the baby. But as far as it being, I sometimes get comments like, but if I have low estrogen, will I be less feminine? No, like it depends on someone's context. Because estrogen's involved in breast development, we associate it with the female organism, but really, progesterone is the protective hormone, and that it does facilitate as well as having children. And hyperestrogen, it can be an issue because of that growth mechanism. And that's why blocking it is like the first line of defense for most breast cancers. So it's a very stimulatory hormone. It stimulates cells, and it can be bad because, or not. I hate really calling hormones bad or good because they're just doing what they're told. They all have their purpose and their biological function. And so I like never attach like negativity to it. I just try to live in reality that it's responsible for growth, and that's why it can grow children, but it can also grow cancer. And that's why you want to get to ultimately the bottom of why you have hyperestrogen. And that can be like fat cells can synthesize their own estrogen. It could be weight, but it could also be like medications, birth control, phytoestrogens, diet. Yeah. But yeah, you want to have enough sufficient progesterone to counteract estrogen. And so that's good that you have normal, or whoever you're talking about has normal progesterone.
So if someone had, let's say they have endometriosis or whatever, and they have really high estrogen, when you take progesterone, does it like lower the estrogen, or does it just lower the effects of estrogen?
Yeah, so it actually doesn't allow the estrogen to enter the cell. And so it decomposes the estrogen receptor. And like in the menstrual cycle, when you're like about to ovulate, you have this surge of estrogen, and that's followed by this big wave of progesterone to counteract, to basically protect you. And there's always that beautiful relationship. Even when you get pregnant, your progesterone surges a lot to protect you, probably from the effects of the estrogen needed to let cells divide to create a human. And so you can see that really well in the pregnancy cycle, you'll produce so like the highest amount ever in your life. And that's why people say having pregnancy extends your life, because it's very protective. But yeah, to answer your question, it literally causes the estrogen receptor to decompose. And so it can be used as medicine in that way. But like I said, we want to get to the bottom of why this is happening in the first place, and then use the progesterone strategically. For younger people, it can be very helpful, and some you don't need it long term usually, because taking it can stimulate its own synthesis. But some people do take it long term. It's used for miscarriage and for pregnancy to help a woman get pregnant. So there's it's like a miracle. It's nothing short of miracle, this substance that we have in our body, but we also farm it from plants usually.
So I heard that there's 5 types of PCOS, adrenal, insulin resistance, and some other ones. Do you find that there's 5 different types, or are they all basically the same?
I think that there's probably more, the storm looks the same on, there's probably certain threads that go through most people. For what like induces PCOS in like animal models, it can be different. Like for one, I know they can induce PCOS in animals with changing the light environment. They can also do it by removing the thyroid gland, and they can also do it by injecting estrogen into the animal. And it just to show like the causative factors of these things tend to be this storm, as I like to think about it. With PCOS, they are fluid-filled sacs, which does parallel estrogen's role in taking water into the cell. Also, these things happen near the ovaries where there is a high production of hormones. And actually, for the ovaries, they tend to be colder to protect against the effects of estrogen. And that's why women are a little bit colder usually. Yeah, you want to protect yourself from these things. But as far as there really being these like 5, sometimes I think we get this, we just start to get obsessive about these things. I think with same thing with the menstrual cycle. I think really just understanding what's causing it usually is maybe more helpful than buying yourself as I have adrenal PCOS, because ultimately if you have hair growth on your where it looks like it has those male features, that per the literature, that is from adrenal stimulation, releasing cortisol facilitated by estrogen, ultimately increasing those androgens. And so I don't really know if there's too much to whether you have some unique thing. Obviously, everyone's context is like really different. Even when it comes to someone's tumor, like in cancer, like that is unique to them. That lets your finger on your, like the blue, your has that unique mark. Without a doubt, like your manifestation is unique to you. But I just get wary of those, what Disney princess are you? And then attaching it to like health issues, because I think it's similar to like pathology, like obsesses your issues into these things without thinking deeply about what's going on. So I don't know. I just don't know if it's a good focus. I'm not saying necessarily it's not true or it is true. Obviously, you have your life is responsible for a lot of these things. And that's just the reality of it. But whether we want to like BuzzFeed a thing like on TikTok, I don't know if that's the best use of everyone's time. I'd rather just understand how the body works and it's magnificent, just get to the bottom of that rather than making all these like categories. But yeah, we see those things with like menopause. Which menopause do you have? And maybe we could really understand the body deeply before we categorize ourselves and attach ourselves to a certain label.
So tell me a little bit about light exposure and hormones. How much do we need? Does it matter what time we get it? Do windows count?
The window thing is, I've seen argued on if that is equivalent. I tend to choose that it is just as good because I'm inside a lot. I like, this is my biggest like health qualm, is like not getting enough sunlight, because I have a lot of work. That's something I'm dealing with myself. It's like my biggest like health issue, is I just have a lot to work on. And like, I don't know if someone has good ideas on how to overcome this. I use a red light device. I use like a chicken lamp one, not the fancy ones. Everyone always asks me questions on like where to buy it. And it's literally from like Petco. But yeah, I think we can see that during the winter, we tend to see things. We tend to experience more depression, PMS, weight gain. And that is really from historically, every animal has it goes into like hibernation mode. And we do descend from animals that do hibernate, but we have developed like an anti-hibernation technique so that we don't actually go into hibernation. Although I wish we did, like I need a break, but that's okay. From a endocrine, you know, perspective, light deprivation can induce progesterone deficiency. And even darkness is a big stressor on the body. And you even see things like higher rates of like homicide during the night, obviously, because, you know, that could be, nothing really is random. You do see like darkness cause this in like adrenaline, and all of these stressors can really induce like inflammation. I think it's the end of the world. I think you do the most you can with what you can. You go outside in the morning, you try to make sure your circadian rhythm is working great. You can use red light. You can try to get as much sunlight as possible as you possibly can. But that's what I am working on as well. But yeah, ultimately, per the research, light deprivation may have a strong effect on progesterone itself.
Okay. Okay. When you have hormone problems, it's really hard to sleep.
Yeah.
But how do you fix your sleep when you already have the hormone problems?
Yeah. So I think sleep is really multifaceted. Ultimately, it's backwards, but to sleep, you need energy, which is really interesting. And that is why one of the biggest issues with people that can't sleep is their thyroid. That's usually, oh, I can't sleep through the night. That tends to be a thyroid issue. And like a lot of health issues, there's like polarized effects. Like for one, when you have a thyroid issue, you feel like lethargy, but you also can't sleep through the night. And that creates this like, why do I have like adrenaline, but I'm tired and I can't sleep? And it's very conflicting like effects, but that's can be a strong indication of a thyroid issue if you can't sleep through the night. I had that same issue and I just started taking thyroid to directly solve it. And it's like night and day. And so I would probably recommend anyone to go get a thyroid panel and strategically supplement. I think thyroid's one of those things you really have to play with the supplement, like the thing that works for you, it seems, because I take a T3 and I just buy it online. I don't even get a prescription, but it's helped me sleep through the night and sleep sufficiently and feel renewed in the morning. And like one of thyroid's functions really is to energize all of your tissues, which is why you start to feel warmer when you start taking it. But it can ultimately encourage a proper metabolism for everything to work. And then the other thing too with sleep is progesterone can really help. That's why it's taken often at night, because it can, having a deficiency can very much hurt your sleep, deficiency of progesterone. So a lot of compounders, they don't, when they make progesterone, they try not to get it on their skin. We'll make them too relaxed. They'll want to take a nap. Yeah. Which is interesting. But yeah, sleep, like every health issue, it's really multifaceted. If you're going, it's really rough actually working with patients that can't sleep, because a lot of it is emotional, right? Like when we're stressed about something. And so that's really something it's hard to supplement your way out of. And with all these things, you want to look at what's going on and see what you can do. But from an endocrine perspective, like those two things, progesterone deficiency and low thyroid, will without a doubt cause sleep issues. They did for me, I know firsthand, but for a lot of our patients as well.
So what are your thoughts on long-term birth control use and hormonal imbalances, since everybody's given birth control to solve all their problems?
Yeah. So there's a few different types of birth control. The most common one is progestin. I think some people take estrogen plus progesterone, but the biggest thing to know about that is that it's not progesterone and it doesn't have the effects of progesterone. Progestin is usually based off the molecule testosterone and it's altered a little bit. And that's why you can have androgenic effects. Progestin also can have estrogenic effects. It's really, I think, long-term, probably not optimal. And when it comes to something like breast cancer and other types of cancers, the literature is very mixed on if it increases your risk. And so when people say it doesn't change you at all, they're looking at their studies. And then I think on like Susan G. Komen has like way higher links of these, of birth control being related to bigger issues. But I think I personally wouldn't take it. It ultimately doesn't regulate your hormones. It changes the production from, now you have this new baseline. And so when people give it, they're doing that to avoid fluctuations in the hormones because you're going up and down. But that beautiful cycle has a lot of important functions, and it's actually related to cell renewal. And I want to learn, dig more into, I think there needs to be more research into that as well, because whenever these cycles in life, they are related to a bigger picture, and it's known to be related to cell renewal, and you want to have healthy cell renewal so that your cells can thrive. And so, yeah, I think the long-term use is probably not beneficial, because progestin is not progesterone, and progesterone is just that beneficial. So I think most women are taking progestin. It's called, the actual thing is called LNG. And ultimately it can have androgenic effects, and it can have estrogenic effects. I think it can also impact your cortisol as well. And then I always get asked, but doesn't it reduce your chance of ovarian cancer? And it's good to know why people say that, because how could it increase your risk of breast cancer and decrease your risk of ovarian cancer? And that's because you don't ovulate on the pill. So you don't have that surge of estrogen. And that's why they say, and you're not stimulating the ovaries, right? Because you're not ovulating. So for those reasons, people often say that it reduces your chance of ovarian. But what really matters is you have that chronic balance of estrogen and progesterone. That's what matters at the end of the day. And specifically matters for tissues that are hormonally sensitive, like ovarian tissue and like breast tissue. Obviously, we don't really get cancer in as much in like our toes or our armpits. And that's because the tissue there is just not as hormonally sensitive. And yeah, I know it's a really controversial topic, but it's good just to know at least what you're taking and what it is and what it's doing. I know that I saw like a company that's, it's good for you or something. I don't think there's anything that shows it's good for you. It's not what you make in your body. So you want to, what I would always want is what's identical to what I make. And actually, people have used high doses of natural progesterone for birth control. It's really hard to find anything about that online or anything, but basically it tricks your body into thinking you are pregnant, because that's what's happened during pregnancy. You have really high progesterone. And I'm by no means recommending that at all, but it's just interesting that, yeah, basically progesterone is very different than progestin. They have similar names, and that name confusion continues to confuse doctors and patients and people. So it's not good.
Probably by design.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some women get PMS problems, like they get like bloating and weight gain or migraines right before their period. What are some hormones that might be out of balance if that's occurring?
Yeah. So around like usually the week before the menstrual cycle, you can have a lot of issues. That's often related to high estrogen and low progesterone. So in the cycle, it is normal to have estrogen dominance for a little bit. It's completely normal. That's part of the cycle. And so I think people always get, wait, do they not know that estrogen is supposed to be high at some point? And yes, like they're right. It is supposed to be high at some point. It's just not supposed to be sustained. So you're not supposed to have sustained estrogen dominance. I believe only supposed to be dominant for a few hours. And so when it's sustained, that's when you have those issues. And not only that, combined with a low progesterone production, then you don't have, like I said, that protective soothing wave coming over. Anytime you see something like edema, water retention, you really should think estrogen, because that, again, water and estrogen have this really interesting role where estrogen, it's allowing the cell to take in water. And a lot of times when you resolve that ratio, the symptoms will go away. I think like any, like the menstrual cycle, all of these functions, like this, the beautiful state of living should be effortless. So the period should arrive and you didn't even know it was coming. And I think that could be a nice goal for women. And when these things happen early on, why this is happening, because over time, really, they can just exasperate and get worse. But specifically too, with them, a lot of women get migraines. Migraines are very heavily women, like women get them way more than men. And when those associations happen, like women are more likely to get autoimmune diseases, women are more likely to get Alzheimer's, women are more likely to die of a heart attack. If they get one, they're like, it's more aggressive. And so a lot of those interesting, unfortunate situations maybe because of a different hormonal patterns that we're seeing now. And then, yeah, specifically with the migraines, I get that a lot. And that's because estrogen can increase your sensitivity to stimuli. And then when it's heightened, or before your menstrual cycle that parallels those menstrual migraines. And I remember someone commented and was like, the only thing I can do for that is drink coffee. And she's spontaneously using medicine to increase progesterone because caffeine can increase progesterone. But yeah, so a lot of women can take progesterone or other things. You don't have to take that. One thing with progesterone is there's studies that show it can make you more altruistic, and it can make emotions intensify. And I always try to remind myself that is not always bad. I kind of want to be sometimes like this robot that doesn't feel anything, but that's not who we are. We are very in touch with our emotions, and we are so that we can really understand the needs of our children and be very in tune. And so I try not to think of like necessarily being more emotional as just the worst thing ever. Obviously, if it's like really depressive and getting in the way of your life, I think that's not necessarily like good, but progesterone can have that effect of just intensifying emotions. And then obviously the estrogen swings is really why all the PMS can happen.
Other than bioidentical hormones or things like that, are there any supplements that women with different hormonal imbalances should consider?
Yeah. And you don't have to take bioidentical hormones. I think you, depending on the age, it's really positive. Overall, it seems to be a net positive. Like I was talking to my mom and literally last night, and we were talking about vitamins and stuff. And we both agreed that like over the age of 40, most women should take thyroid, pregnenolone, and progesterone. And she was like, yeah, if I had to choose three things, that would be it. But that's because when you're older, things are becoming more or less capable. And to experience menopause and stuff is actually a gift, right? That we historically haven't lived that long, which is why we would have died before menopause. But now we have lengthened lives due to like hygiene and no famine and no war. And so it is really this gift. And just taking those three things, they're very safe. And your body's already producing them, just more in youth. And so we restore youthful levels so that you can thrive. Now, if you're like younger, it's good to understand that progesterone too is, and pregnenolone are, there's no toxic side effects of progesterone other than it's not toxic, but it can change the dates of your cycle, right? Because there's different times where you're producing more. But so that's not necessarily bad to take or anything. But I always hate on what supplements I should take because I do think everyone's different, and I don't think you need to take as much as people think or want you to take, because if you are living in accordance to like nature and really what allows us to thrive. And so that just comes down to eating nutrient dense foods and relaxing and going outside. I don't think like the more you get the basics down right, the less kind of adjunct things you really need to do. I'm doing an experiment though, and I'm like taking a little bit more things, experimenting with how I feel. Just you go through waves and journeys of needing more things, needing less things. But I personally have benefited a lot from taking thyroid. So I don't know, I'm like very, I like to take things and recommend things that are like very directly helpful rather than you not feeling anything. If I don't feel anything different, I won't take it. I need to feel that it's worth it. I think most people do benefit from taking something, as magnesium is just the most like basic thing that I don't think there's a ton of downside. But I think you should be like really cautious on what you take. I think a lot of like our content does circle around just like being careful about what's been marketed to you as healthy. Because I know a lot of people recommend like resveratrol. Resveratrol, that isn't a phytoestrogen. It looks like an estrogen molecule. It's classified as estrogenic. And these things that are like, this is going to extend your life, actually may have literally the opposite effect. Literally may decrease your lifespan. And so I think more than anything, being really cautious of what you take rather than just taking something because you read or saw a health reel online. Just, you only have one body. And so it deserves a lot of respect and value, and just being really careful over everything. Everyone has just different opinions on things. And so you have to like think critically about all of these things. You don't have to, but I would really put on your thinking cap and dig deep and think about how it's changing you and how you feel, and really listening to those feedback loops and start reading and understanding and all of that.
Yeah, because I find that some people will take too much of a supplement and that'll, if you take too much vitamin this, it decreases that one, and they don't really know what's going on. They're just, I heard this was good.
Yeah, totally. Most people are like just taking like a green powder, like a fish oil. I would never take those things. Like, there's really no need. And a lot of times they can do more harm than good. Like, even greens can be very high in oxalates and phytic acid and stuff, like those green powders and stuff. And like, everyone's taking those. And then for fish oils, most of them are rancid, or and they oxidize easily. And they even oxidize in your body. If you think about how hot our body is, it's like 100 degrees. It's really hot. And it runs hot so that your cells can work. But as far as fish oil going rancid in your body, it's, and then producing like free radicals, because of it's not stable. The bonds aren't stable. And yeah, people are just taking things. It's crazy. Like, everyone, like, the vitamin culture is actually like, how many things people are taking, like even like iron and stuff. I'm like, no, you don't want just like unbound iron. We need to get the basics down before we start adding in really anything. But, and that's why I try to tell patients and stuff, like, this isn't like a panacea, but it is too, why we center more around like very more serious health issues, like fibroids, endometriosis. That way you can be really strategic about what you're doing. It's rather than like, I just like I'm living my day. It's really like pain points that we can solve using things like progesterone, pregnenolone. We use a lot of like niacinamide. We use a lot of vitamin E. We use those kind of things that will bring stability to the body. But yeah, it is wild what everyone's taking. I'm like, wow. I don't know. I would just take a step back and really make sure you know what you're putting in your body every day. Yeah.
So how does Moment Health work?
Yeah, so we start with an at-home blood test to get, I've got to send you one too. You can definitely do it. And it's a finger prick on your finger, and then you get the test and you can see this. We measure estradiol, which is a type of estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEAS, cortisol, SHBG. And so it's a really good like starting point of what's going on with your hormones and the production, because there's like optimal secretions in the body. Like I said, you want normal, healthy amounts. And then you do a Zoom consult to review the results, and then we'll ship out what you need. So we actually do our own progesterone and pregnenolone, but some women don't want that and don't do that. And we will meet the patient where they are. We'll go over like nutrition, actually have like pretty specific nutrition guidelines that we want whole body to be working together synergistically. And then it's keep checking in, and there's a community and a good course on lifestyle with red light and exercise and food. Like you're saying, should I eat milk? And there's different viewpoints on that. So you can, it's all about elevating yourself to the next level, and so that you can thrive and experience longevity for as many years as possible. But yeah, is that simple, right? On the process?
Yeah. Yeah. It's simpler than just trying things for years and not knowing.
That's so true. The worst thing you can pay for is bad medical guidance, I think, because you pay with your body more than just your money. And we definitely work on like vetting, and we've had such amazing results too. It's like, it makes me so happy. The one thing with hormones is like, people do react differently to different substances. It's not like cookie cutter. It's not like selling like one shampoo. It's like very custom to somebody. And then you don't know how someone's going to react, because you didn't live their life. And so sometimes people won't respond well to progesterone, possibly because they have candida or like all these background issues that we aren't able to anticipate because we don't live with them. We don't know their entire life. And so you put forth a formula that's worked for a lot of people and is very safe and effective. I would say that's what we're concerned about, is like, we want safe and effective things, like that meet that like happy place of like safe and effective of substances that can really allow the cell to thrive and breathe properly, like respire properly. Because when anything gets disturbed, that's when, like chronically disturbed, that's when you're going to see issues. So it's getting ahead of it. There's certain hormonal patterns that you want to not have, like chronically high estrogen. And it's really about the chronic nature of an imbalance. Once in a while, that's par for the course of living. Encountering stress once in a while, yes, 100%, that's normal. But the problem is when it's like the body's constantly being assaulted. So yeah. And then you retest every 6 months, usually, depending on more. We might check in more depending if you're having like something, can't get your period back. That really might be something we check in a lot more with than like just hot flashes, where we could probably solve that pretty fast.
Are there any new developments or research in hormonal imbalances?
Yeah, every day. I think the scientific literature is actually abundant on like amazing things we can do for ourselves. I think it's more about what gets sifted through and given to the normal people. I definitely think on the side of like extreme diseases like cancer, there's just so many basic hormonal corrections we can do that don't actually cost that much that can help restore health. Even treating something like breast cancer with progesterone, I think we're just I don't know if a lot of doctors are even doing that, but it's an obvious next step because of it's an estrogen antagonist. So if estrogen is causing the cancer to grow in any way, administering that in high doses, like, no brainer. And I just feel like it really actually does bug me because it's very inexpensive and it can be accessible to a lot of people. And then also taking things like thyroid and DHEA, like the simplest things actually there's very simple steps that are scientifically like shown to help that aren't that complicated. You don't actually need like this groundbreaking new bee venom therapy to help with a lot of those things, because those things actually don't address the environment of the body. Those are like the long-term environment of the body. Like using bee venom is not addressing your life and in your context. But yeah, I think there's a lot of at-home devices that are coming out of measuring at home, like constantly. And I wonder if that'll like usher in a neuroticism over like these levels. And I'm curious how that will pan out. I think it's interesting, but again, yeah, I think it'll be maybe become like this like obsessive crutch. Oh my God, my cortisol's high every day. Like it just creates more cortisol secretion, maybe. But we're really, I think, just at the beginning too of using bioidentical hormones for a lot of these issues and using them safely, right? Like a lot of women, their OBs will just give them estrogen, which again, it's a growth hormone. So you're introducing growth into the body. And so if you don't balance it with the protective hormones, progesterone and testosterone has to be balanced too. Those like three steroid hormones are just absolutely critical to get right. So I would like to see more monitoring on making sure those levels get optimized for especially mature older ladies that have been like told that all she needs are estrogen or she shouldn't take any hormones. Because if you understand that some of them are protecting you, then you want to focus on those more than anything so that you are protected as much as you can. Yeah.
So what social media platforms are you guys the most active on? I know TikTok, but what else?
Yeah, Instagram. I do a lot of like medical writing on Instagram. I try to put it into words that I would understand. And so I would say Instagram and TikTok. Yeah. Probably our biggest. Just to give women the tools that you don't have to even rely on us. Like we all for free, please just use the education and expand so you can really go the next level for your health.
Is there anything else you'd like to leave the audience with before we go?
I don't think so. I feel like we covered so much stuff. And it was such good questions. They were such hard questions. I think just listening to your body above all else. I've talked about this before, but about like how the messages, like the feedbacks are really pure because they're not like indoctrinated by outside source. So they're just feedback loops that are like, if there's a pain point, I think Dr. Rapeet has this amazing quote that's, if you are sick, consider everything you are doing as wrong. And I totally get what he's saying because, okay, if you are sick, if you have terrible depression, like PMS depression, for everything you're doing as contributing to that, and not in a sad way or like you're doing something like not a negative way, just in an objective way of, okay, what have I assumed that I'm doing right that's not right? And that question, like innocently and honestly, will lead you down like the path of better answers so that you can ultimately become a better, healthier you. So I think that's it.
Okay, awesome. So I'm going to put all the links in the show notes. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I had an episode a while back with Dr. Mona Fahoum of Feminescence, and we spoke about Feminescence, Maca Harmony, and their Maca products. And if you're a woman who's ever had hormonal imbalances, if you're trying to come off the birth control pill, or even if you're going through menopause, this is a natural way to help ease that transition and to help balance your hormones. There's nothing quite like it, so go to feminescence.com, enter code KAT15, K-A-T-1-5, for 15% off any of their single pack products, and definitely go check out the episode. Just search for Mona Fahoum on my podcast and listen. You won't regret it.
Thank you for listening to the episode. If you made it this far, I'm sure you found some benefit to the hard work that I put into the show. Show your support by subscribing to the podcast, leave me a voicemail question, or email me at thehealthfulgypsy@gmail.com. I would love, love, love to hear from you. Be sure to join the Facebook group. You can find all that information in the show notes and my website, katkatibi.com.
This podcast is for informational merrymakings and metaphysical purposes only. Statements and views are not medical advice. This podcast, including KatKatibi, disclaim any adverse effects by the use of information you may have heard. Opinions of guests are totally their own. This podcast does not endorse statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications, credibilities, or sanity. Individuals may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to on the podcast. If you think you have a medical problem, consult with a licensed medical physician, not just the spirit of your ancestors while on ayahuasca.